Welcome back to our Psalms of Histories series. Currently, we're in 2 Samuel, chapters 8, 9, and 10. There's some corresponding passages in 1 Chronicles as well. But we're in a season of David's life where he's become king, unified Israel. He has moved the capital from Hebron to Jerusalem, a city that he had captured from the Jebusites. He's built out the city. He's fortified it. He's built himself a palace. There's additional suburbs. He's also brought the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem, his new capital city, the city of David. 2 Samuel chapter 6 records all of those particular details. David is in a really great place, a sweet spot. He's got a capital, a political center. That political center has the Ark, the presence of God. Good things are happening in David's life. And in chapter 7 of 2 Samuel, David is looking around and he's thinking to himself, man, I've got all of this wonderful stuff. Man, God has blessed me amazing in amazing ways, and I want to bless God back. And it just doesn't seem right to me that here I am dwelling in a cedar home and the Ark of the Covenant is in a tent. And so David's heart is to build God a temple. That ends up being met with a no. You can't do it, but your son will. And it's really just David getting this Davidic covenant, these promises being made by God. Just some really very powerful, profound things happening. Not because David has deserved any of this, but just out of God's goodness, out of God's grace, out of God's unmerited favor. And then it's in response to that favor, chapter 8 of 2 Samuel, that David does something that he hasn't done before. Really, we haven't seen it probably since the initial conquest under the leadership of Joshua. David goes on the offense most of the time, especially like dealing with the Philistines or the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Amalekites. Israel was always playing defense. They would be attacked and they would have to defend themselves. But David goes on the offense. He is very proactive in attacking the enemies of Israel, providing, as a result, greater security for God's people, fulfilling some of that initial mandate of what God had told the people to go in and conquer the land, that this was the land that God had given them. And he deals with the Philistines and he deals with the Syrians and the Ammonites and he expands Israel's borders in astounding ways. There's some historical debate how much territory David was able to increase Israel's lands by, but as far as the Euphrates up into the north, some 50,000 square miles of territory David conquers and places under his dominion. And it's really in response to these conquests and the expanding of the borders and God's blessing and his favor that I think that there are three really little psalms that David writes that we could attribute to kind of the expressions of what's going on in his life in the midst of these continuing victories. And we're going to look first at Psalm 61. Again, we'll look at three psalms that I think fit within this time period. They're not lengthy, thus we'll couple three together. Psalm 61, it has as its heading, Assurance of God's Eternal Protection. It's listed as to the chief musician to be played on a stringed instrument, a Psalm of David. So it does have a specific attributing of authorship to David himself. Hear my cry, O God, and attend to my prayer. From the end of the earth I will cry to you. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. I will trust in the shelter of your wings. For you, O God, have heard my vows. And keep in mind that so much of David's activity beginning in 2 Samuel 8 is a response to this incredible, beautiful thing that happens between David and God, the establishment of this Davidic covenant, that God would provide a savior through David and his family. For you, God, you've heard my vows, and you have given me the heritage of those who fear your name. you will prolong the king's life, his years as many generations. He shall abide before God forever. Oh, prepare mercy and truth, which may preserve him. And then he closes, again, a very simple psalm. He says, so I will sing praise to your name forever, that I may daily perform my vows. David is very focused on fulfilling his end of the bargain, being obedient to God's commands, being faithful to steward the kingdom that God had given him. David not trying to earn a favor he had been given at all, not just the kingdom itself, but this inclusion in God's divine overarching plan for humanity. And so we see that he pulls out his pen and a stringed instrument, and he writes this beautiful song of expression. If you flip over to Psalms 20 and 21, I think also could be attributed, again, it's hard to say with certainty, but could be attributed to this period of David's life. Psalms 20, its heading is the assurance of God's saving work. And it, like the other, is to the chief musician, Psalm of David, and so it has direct authorship. Verse 1, may the Lord answer you in the day of trouble. May the name of God, the God of Jacob, defend you. May he send you help from the sanctuary and strengthen you out of Zion. May he remember all your offering and accept your burnt sacrifice. Selah. And when you see Selah, that's pause. Take a moment. Contemplate. May God remember your offerings. Accept your burnt sacrifice. May he grant you according to your heart's desire and fulfill all your purpose. That's a dangerous verse. May he grant you according to your heart's desire. The key to that is to make sure that your heart is desiring holy things, pure things, godly things. That your heart's desire is not that your will be done, but that God's will may be done in your life. The desire of the heart. I look back in my life and I'm so thankful that God didn't give me my heart's desire, because my heart didn't know what it really wanted in those times. May he grant you according to your heart's desire and fulfill your purpose. I like that idea of fulfilling one's purpose. We will rejoice in your salvation, and in the name of our God, we will set up our banners. And banners were to declare great victories. May the Lord fulfill all your petitions. Now I know that the Lord saves his anointed. He will answer him from his holy heaven with the saving strength of his right hand. Some trust in chariots and some in horses. And again, fitting within the narrative, David conquers the Syrians in the north, and he takes their chariots, and he takes some of their horses, and then he maims the others so that they couldn't be used in battle. And he's saying, hey, some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. They have bowed down and fallen, speaking of his enemies, but we have risen and stand upright. Save, Lord. May the king answer us when we call. I love that psalm. That's such a sweet psalm. Psalm 21, continuing, joy in the salvation of the Lord to the chief musician, a psalm of David. Again, direct attributing. This is a psalm of thanksgiving. It has definite messianic undertones. The king shall have joy in your strength, O Lord. I like that. The king shall have joy in your strength. It's the strength of the Lord that provides us joy. And in your salvation, how greatly shall he rejoice? You have given him his heart's desire, and have not withheld the requests of his lips. David has had one victory after another, one conquest after another. David's desire was godly. It was God-driven. It was to fulfill God's commands for Israel, to take the land that God had promised them. David, this psalm of exaltation, of thanksgiving, verse 3, for you met him with the blessings of goodness. You set a crown of pure gold upon his head. He asked life from you, and you gave it to him, length of days forever and ever. His glory is great in your salvation. Honor and majesty you have placed upon him. For you have made him most blessed forever. You have made him exceedingly glad with your presence. For the king trusts in the Lord, and through his mercy, and through the mercy of the Most High, he shall not be moved. I love that you have made him exceedingly glad with your presence. You know, that is the most amazing idea, isn't it? That the God of the universe, the creator and sustainer of all things, is intentionally personable. Such a unique idea within Christianity, unique really within the context of the other religions of the world. I mean, Islam places Allah very much at a distance. The Jewish faith almost over reveres God to the point of detachment. God being separate from man, being above man. And yet, even here, within the Old Testament context, David is saying, like, I'm exceedingly glad with your presence, that David felt, experienced the presence of the Lord in his life. Do you experience the presence of God? Now, practically, what does that look like in our lives? Well, that's through the indwelling of his Holy Spirit, the leading of his Spirit. But how amazing that the God that would dwell in Shekinah glory above the Ark of the Covenant, and the same God that would don human flesh in the person of Jesus, the God that spoke all things into existence, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, wants to dwell within us and relate personally with us. And that should make us exceedingly glad. Again, he says, for the king trusts in the Lord, and through the mercy of the Most High, he shall not be moved. The mercy of God gave David a security. Verse 8, your hand will find all your enemies. Your right hand will find those who hate you. You shall make them as a fiery oven in the time of your anger. David was conquering in the name of the Lord, under the direction of the Lord. The Lord shall swallow them up in his wrath, and the fire shall devour them. Their offspring shall be destroyed from the earth, and their descendants from among the sons of men. For they intended evil against you. They devised a plot which they are not able to perform. Therefore you will make them turn their back. You will make them ready for your arrows on your string towards their faces. No doubt this has a practical, literal fulfillment in David's day, but you can see how this would also point to a greater fulfillment at the end of the age, during the battle of Armageddon, when all wrongs are righted and all of God's enemies are thwarted. He closes this psalm, verse 13. He says, be exalted, O Lord, in your own strength. We will sing and praise your power. It'd be very easy for David to become filled with pride, to be conceited, to take these victories as proof or evidence of his power, his might, his prowess. And yet David is constantly, we're getting this vibe through these Psalms, reminding himself that it's not his strength, it's the Lord's. It's not his power, it's God's. It's not his victories. They're just being done on behalf of the Lord, the giver of salvation. Just powerful, these three Psalms, Psalm 61, 20, and 21, related to this section of David's life where he is secure, he's solid in Jerusalem, but now he's gone on the offense, taking on the enemies of God. Powerful, powerful things. If you enjoyed these Psalms, check out the Psalms of History series that relates to our Harmony of the History series. You can find all of the media by going to our website, calvary316.tv/histories. May God bless you.